Okay, we are going to learn Vatnu Kuma Sutta, the simile of the cloth. Thus have I heard, once the Blessed One was staying at Savatthi in Jetha's school, Anathapindika's monastery. There he addressed the monks, thus monks, Venerable Sir, they replied. The Blessed One said this, monks, suppose the cloth was stained and dirty, and a dyer dipped it in some dye or the other, whether blue or yellow or red or pink, it would take dye badly and be impure in color. And why is that? Because the cloth was not clean. So too, monks, when the mind is defiled, an unhappy destination may be expected. So if you are going to put dye to a cloth, and then it has got this dirt on it, then you can't put the dye, it doesn't take dye well. Similarly, if you are undefiled, if you are defiled, then unhappy destination may be expected. Once suppose the cloth were clean and bright, and a dyer dipped it in some dye or the other, whether blue or yellow or red or pink, it would take the dye well and be pure in color. And why is that? Because the cloth was clean. So too, monks, when the mind is undefiled, a happy destination may be expected. And what, monks, are the defilement of the mind? Covetousness and unrighteous greed are a defilement of the mind. So this covetousness means that having seen someone or something, you are saying, let this be mine. So are we actually saying such a thing? We do that one without even knowing sometimes. You know, having seen a house, you are saying, this house is so beautiful. What you meant is that if I have money, then I will buy this one. Then you touch the purse and then you see you don't have, then leave it. So this covetousness can be marked in this particular diagram. I will explain the diagram first. There are four nutriments, that is the physical nutriment, contact as nutriment, mental volition as nutriment, consciousness as nutriment. Because of these four nutriments, we go for bad ways. Bad way through will, bad way through hate. There are four bad ways. Tomorrow we'll be studying this one a little bit further. So we have got a few parts of that what you are going to study tomorrow. So the physical nutriment, what is this physical nutriment? This physical nutriment is the food that you are eating. And if there is a chicken in your house, and then you kill it and eat it, so chicken is a physical nutriment. And again, you give your body to a crocodile, it will eat it. So then you can see you are also a physical nutriment. There is one discourse called Sunspesh Discourse in Connected Discourses of the Buddha. There Buddha is saying that a father, a mother and their child, a son, going in a desert path. So they take their provisions and then halfway through their provisions dwindle and they do not have any food to eat. So then they think that let us kill our dearly loved son, eat the flesh of the son, and then cross the desert. Otherwise, we three of us are going to die. So they kill their dearly loved son, eat the flesh of the son, and then cross the desert. So when they are eating that food, are they thinking that we are eating a good food? They are beating their breast. You know, where is our son? So they are not eating a good food. So Buddha said, that is how we should be understanding this physical nutriment. That means you yourself is a physical nutriment. And if you understand that way, then you won't be coming to this world. In other words, you become a never return, anaga, third stage of sainthood. So that is the physical nutriment. Because of the physical nutriment, You get the clinging to sensual desire. For example, for the food, you cling. And for a beautiful person, also you cling. So there is clinging to sensual desire. And then we get the flood of sensual desire. It becomes more and more. That, today you are eating the food in America. Also you are eating food from India, China. It's becoming more and more. One European person who was working with me in Australia, he was telling me the best thing happened to Australia was that people came from various parts of the world and then they brought their food. Now we are eating our food as well as their food. So that is the flood of sensual desire. When it comes to the unbearable state, then it is called bab of lust. Bab of lust. At this particular time, a dart is wedging into your mind, which tomorrow we are going to discuss. That this dart has been labeled as a fair thing, while it is actually the real nature is the foul. When this one happens, then your mind go and hold the physical neutron. In other words, physical neutron become home. For this consciousness is steadying on this physical neutron. One good example is you put a bite over here, and here to here you feel, and then consciousness come to arise, and then after that one thought you don't have it. So what you do, you get another bite and put it inside. So you are going back to the form again and again. Physical neutron, bab of lust, you go back to the physical neutron. So that is what is going to happen. The bab of lust could be understood. A young girl see a young boy see a young girl. Then their hearts are beating. At that time, if their father or mother saying, get rid of that girl, get rid of that boy, they can't, because that something is inside in the bloodstream. So that is the first path. And then there is this contact as nutriment. To understand the contact as nutriment, Buddha said that think about a skin cow. If a skin cow is nearby a parapet wall, then the creatures in the parapet wall will bite her. If the skin cow go under the water, then the creatures in the water will bite her. And then the skin cow is in the open air, then the creatures in the open air will bite her. Whatever way the skin cow is been by those insects. So we are like a skin cow. Whether we like it or not, our eye is open, so we get the form contact. Our ear is open. Whether we like it or not, we get sound. So that's how we should be understanding the contact as beautiful. So when there is this contact, then there is a feeling come to arise, and also the perception come to arise. From the perception, you perceive the feeling. What one feels? What one feels is what one perceives. What one perceives is what one appears. So from that one you get the virtue and duty clinging. That means you are holding the future. So this one happens when you have a good time. Let us say on a Sunday that you are not going to work, and then you go to a fair or something and buy vegetables and so on, but come back home and cook it, and then you go to a river and have a bath, and then coming back the whole family eating together in a table. Let us say husband and wife didn't have a fight and children are studying very well as well. So you are happily eating together a good meal, and then at that time you hold, okay, today is good, that tomorrow will be like this one. You might be thinking that these things happen to you when you are sort of older or, that sort of age. But this is actually happening when you do not know about many things. Let us say a father and a son is going somewhere, and then they see a place where they are constructing a bridge. Someone is getting down from his Pajero type vehicle, and then ordering people to do this one, do that one, and so on. So this little boy is asking his father, who is that person? The father is saying, he is the engineer. So now this person is thinking, I will become an engineer when I grow up. A role model was taken at that time. Or else, let us say, this person is sick, and then this child is going to the doctor. And then you can see there are people waiting in the queue, and people getting cured. Our doctor got a reputation, good reputation. So when I grow up, I will become doctor. The engineer, when he construct the bridge, how long it will last? Maybe 80 years. So when Buddha is preaching Dhamma, Buddha is saying, whatever the wealth in this Anga Magadha, referring to certain places in India, whatever the wealth these places have, there's quite a lot of wealth in the first divine realm, Chatur Maharajika. If someone is practicing virtue on a full moon day, then that person can be born in that divine world. So having heard this one, a lay person or a bhikkhu, he thinks, okay, then full moon day I will practice virtue very well, so that I can be born among the divine beings, and then I will be dancing with those deities. So that is your hold in the future. The bridge I was talking about, engineer's bridge, is this one. This one will last only 80 years. If you go to first divine realm, then it will last 10 million years. It's a longer bridge. So that is one part of virtue and duty clinging. And there is another part that you might know, that there was someone called Dharuchiputra in the Buddha's dispensation. He was practicing virtue very well. He thought he is the Buddha. And then one of the divine beings told him, you are not the Buddha, Buddha is somewhere else. So because of the virtue, his mind is not shaking. And then because of that one, he thought he is the Buddha. So there are two parts to virtue and duty clinging. So let us say you hold the future, and then you get the flood of existence. So you are happy to go into the divine world, Brahma world, and so on. And then you get the Bab of Hate. So this, when you have the Bab of Hate, then next step is that you are going and holding to the feeling. One good example is my grandfather, he lived 100 years. My mother is always saying, go and eat with your grandfather. So when we are going to eat, my grandfather become grumpy. He's saying, these people in the house can't cook. So that food is tasty for me. What is the problem? You know, when we are born, we get these taste buds in the tongue, and then after that one, they are not coming back. And 100 years gone, and then it is sort of vanishing and has vanished quite a lot. He does not know this one. He thinks that people in the house can't cook. So what is he actually asking? He is demanding, let me have the feeling I used to have when I was eating as a young person or as a child. So yes, he's going back to the feeling. So that is the second part. And then the third part, well, over here you might think that we are always going down. It is not actually going down, we are actually going to the right side first. For example, let us say there is something in Afghanistan, a food, and if you have not heard about it, have not seen it, and then would there be anything about it? Now, so the physical nutriment is the food, it has to be contacted. So when there is a contact, there is a feeling, and there is a perception. From the perception, you perceive the feeling. And in the perception, you get the mental volition. You coordinate your feeling and perception. And then you get the volitional formations, sanskara. And from that one, you construct consciousness. Remember, consciousness is constructed. So that means we are going from left to right. Then why are we saying we are going down? There are other paths. That means you are going to the right and then you are coming back to the left, physical nutriment itself. So we have not drawn that path. So it's like going through a roundabout and then you go down. So here we are going down. So then next one is from the perception we get the volition. So the volition coordinates this feeling, perception you have. And then you get the view clinging. So you are clinging to views. The sort of what is happening here is that you take the feeling as self. You know, the person who is actually eating that mango, by the time when he's eating the mango, it's become pleasurable. So the feeling becomes a self. So then you think that I am. So therefore this view clinging is there. So then it is becoming more and more that the flood of views, when it comes to the unbearable states, that is the bag of views. So dart is wedging to your mind at that time as well. So when you have the bag of views, then you go back and hold the perception. Because the perception is the one letting you come into this path. So when you come to the bag of views, you go back and hold the perception. It's like a monkey, you know, it was holding to the form in the first path. And then monkey let go of the form, now it is holding the feeling in the second path. And in the third path, let go of the feeling, it is holding to the perception. So then the next one is the consciousness as nutriment. And then we get the self theory clinging. So it is having perceived a self, you would be clinging to it. Like, you know, the surfboard, you know, then the beach. Someone is on the surfboard. Then he is saying, you know, look at me, video me. And what is he actually doing? And, you know, he's sliding on that wave. So he feels. So now he is thinking, here I am, I feel, I perceive. So having perceived the self, you cling into it. And then you get the flood of ignorance. And then... And when it comes to the unbearable state, you get the bag of delusion. So when you have the bag of delusion, then you go and hold the volitional formations. Because the volitional formations is the one constructing the consciousness. So that is the diagram. So now this covetousness will be somewhere here. You know, clinging to sensual desire. See this line one. So that is the place for covetousness. In other words, let this be mine is coming up over there. And then next one is ill will is a defilement of the mind. So we have marked the ill will over here. So why do we have ill will over here? You know, what is ill will? You know, having seen someone, you are saying, let this guy be dead. Are we actually saying such a thing? Sometimes we do. We don't, without knowing, we say that one. Let us say your child is sick, so you could not go to work early. So maybe 9 o'clock your work start. 8:30 you put your car to the street, and then in front of you there is someone driving to the 30 speed, while the road is marked as 60. So you probably hoot and then. But you are actually saying, well, this type of person should not be here at this time of the hour. In other words, what you meant was, let this guy be dead. Although you did not verbalize that way, that is what is meant. In your opinion, that person should not be there. That person may be a person who is going to the hospital, but that person should not be there. That's what you think. So, now, the ill will, the mark over here. Here virtue and duty clinging is there. That means you are holding the future. And then why do you get the ill will? Because that when you have a good time in your house, you thought today is good, tomorrow will be good as well. Tomorrow comes that you are about to go to work and you are getting a phone call from your office. Don't come to work, you are fired. Then you have ill will over there. So Now, ill will is a defilement of the mind. And then the anger is marked after the barb of hate. Anger is a defilement of the mind. So, anger is that you are thinking this person is harming me, harming my friends, harming my relatives. Or else, if someone is helping your enemy, you don't like it either. For example, one country does not like another country joining with their enemy countries. So, that is, there is this anger. And in my grandfather's case, he had the anger about his daughter as well, isn't it? Because he was actually thinking, you know, they are not cooking very well. He does not know, his taste buds are gone. So, you can see there is a permanency associated with the anger. How do we get the permanency over here? My grandfather is thinking that he should go to eat the same way as before. So, now, whenever we spin, like, for example, barb of lust, we are going back to the form again and form. So, there is a permanency. Similarly, feeling, contact as nutriment, feeling, barb of hate, we are going back to the feeling. So, there is a permanency. So, remember, inside anger, what is there is the permanency. Like my grandfather thinking he should be able to eat every day as before. And then the next one is the hostility. The hostility is marked over here. Upanaha is the Pali word over there. So, first there is anger, then there is later, there is grudging. So this hostility is something like that, you know, the supermarket, there is a machine to label. This is $2, $2.50, $3 and so on. Likewise, we are labeling people, you know, this is a bad guy, this is a good guy, this is a good guy, this is a bad guy. So this labeling is sort of a bad thing. So it's a sort of a, the bound perception about that person is a bad thing. Now, let us say why it is bad. If you have labeled someone as a good person, if that person is doing a bad thing, what would you do? You look the other way around. And a good example is that, you know, in Sri Lanka, there are these one-way streets in Colombo area. So, some people, what do? If they want to go wrong way, you see a policeman, then ask him, would you like to have a lift? So, the policeman is saying, yes. Then you take the policeman in the car, in the front seat, and then you drive the wrong way. So, at the end of the street also, there is a policeman to stop these people coming in that wrong way. And then he sees the policeman is there. So the policeman has labeled the policeman as a good person, a law-abiding person. Now this person is doing a bad thing. So what is he doing? He's looking the other way around as if he did not see him. So that is bad. On the other hand, if you have labeled someone as a bad person, then you do not like that person doing the good things either. Sometimes to the temple, you know, people who are selling drugs, selling alcohol, they are coming to the temple. They are not normally coming. So then, the people who are normally coming to the temple, talking to each other, say, look, that person, bad guy is here. I don't know why he is here. He might have come because his mother passed away. He wants to give almsgiving, pass the merits. So since we have labeled him as a bad person, we don't let him do good things either. So this is bad. Buddha does not label anyone as a good or bad. Buddha is saying it is the action, not the person. Killing is bad. Stealing is bad. So it is the action, it's not the person. You might have heard about someone called Angulimala, who killed 999 people and Buddha ordained him, and then he became an arahant. If Buddha has labeled him as a, you know, killer, then that person can't become an arahant. So someone who is doing bad things today, maybe that person is doing good things tomorrow. So if you want to look at the way Buddha is looking at, then you need to look at that person as a new person. You know, the yesterday person is not the today person. And sometimes your label is sort of vanishing little bit. Now let us say you have marked someone as number 10, bad person. Let us say you are in the waiting room to see the doctor, and you and that bad person is there, and you are going to collapse. That person is giving you a seat, offering a chair, or maybe you are going to, you know, die, and then person is giving a glass of water. Now you tell to your friend, "I thought that person is really bad one, but he's the one gave me water. He's the one offered me a chair." So the label is still there. The number 10 cannot be found. You know, the number is sort of vanishing over there. So we learn hostility. Now the hostility, you can see. Remember we were talking about the anger has got the permanency associated with it. The hostility has got another quality. That is the differences in volitional formations are there. You know, let us say I'm a person who is drinking alcohol, and then there is another person. If I am a person drinking alcohol, would I label the other person as a drunken fellow? No, I don't. But if I'm not drinking alcohol, if the other person is drinking alcohol, then I would label him as a drunken fellow. So you can see the difference is volitional formations. So the difference in volitional formations are there in the hostility. So you need to remember that. And the inside the anger, there is a permanency associated with the anger. And the next one is the derogation. So the derogation is marked over here. So the makka is the Pali word over here. And sometimes people translate derogation as contempt. The contempt means the feeling that a person is worthless. And if you look at the derogation definition, is the perception or treatment of someone as being of little worth. It is actually a perception, not a feeling. So the derogation is more appropriate than the contempt. But neither of these words explain the real meaning of this one. So let us look at an example, a couple of examples to understand this one. Let us say I am working in office, and I have a degree, and I have experience. And there is a colleague of mine who has got the same degree, but he hasn't got that much experience. So then there are these promotions in the office, and both of us are applying. So when we apply, the departmental head sort of decide the other person, although he is less experienced, is suitable for this one. And then he's giving the job to that person. So I'll be silent. You know that not from every degree. From a degree you can't get every job in over here. There are certain jobs, whatever degree you pass, you can't get it. For example, kingship. To become a king, you need to be born in the king's family. To be born in the king's family, you must have done former meritorious deeds. So maybe the departmental head is sort of seeing such meritorious deeds in him and giving the job. So I'll be silent. Let us say 2 months or so later, he is working in that higher position. And one day, a person working in that section coming to me and saying, "Look, that job must have been given to you. The other person is not suitable." In other words, probably because he is less experienced, he made a mistake. And then this person is picking up on that mistake and doing that wrong. And at that point time, the cat will jump out of the cage and say, "Yes, they should have given it to me. That person is not suitable." So you can see that I am taking a quality out. First, you might think that it is the quality of the person who was appointed or promoted. But if you dig a little bit deeper, then you can actually see sort of a different story. Well, that story is still lasting. The departmental head may be the person who selected me in the first place. So when he selected, then I had a faith about him. He's a good boss. You know, he selected me. His stream of consciousness was flowing in my direction. So I thought, I will be the one promoted. I will get the job. But when his stream of consciousness is not flowing in my direction and went to the colleague of mine, then I remove the faith quality about him. So that is derogation external. And there is derogation internal, which is more harmful than that one. Let us say there are 2 monks, a senior monk and the junior monk. When the junior monk is going on arms round, he sees a beautiful woman, having seen that he disrobed himself and then getting married to that woman and then have children and so on. So let us say the senior monk, when he is going on arms round, he sees that previously the monk now has become a lay person and having children and so on. So that person, the senior monk, would blame him. You know, you don't have faith about Buddha. You don't have a wisdom, concentration, mindfulness and effort. And then this junior monk, previously junior monk, now the lay person, is saying, Bhante, addressing the monk as Bhante, that my mom is living. In other words, that I have to look after my mom. That's why I destroy. So according to Mahanidesa, that is the biggest lie. You see, since you want to go in this samsara birth to birth, then you disrobe, but then you are telling the lie that you do that one to look after the mom. So in this particular one, he might escape from the senior monk, but when he is going home, he remember what the senior monk said was true. When I was in the temple, I was having faith about the Buddha, I was meditating, I had the concentration, wisdom, effort, mindfulness. Now, because of this woman, I was, I lost all 5 qualities, faith, wisdom, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. He might go home and might fight with his wife. Even if he does not fight, at night time, by the time of he is going to sleep, he remember, he lost these 5 qualities. So that is the derogation, the external, internal. So this derogation can be sort of thought of as a post-perception of you taking something as mine. When you say this is mine, and there is a post-perception about it, so derogation can be thought or meditated upon as it is. Now if I take the first example, that the office example, that the stream of consciousness from my boss was flowing in my direction, when I was selected, it was flowing in my direction. So I thought it will flow in my direction all the time. But when it is going to my colleague of mine, I took his qualities, faith qualities, survey. So in other words, you can see the derogation is stemming from anger. The whatever permanency there in the anger, now it is there in the derogation. Because I thought the stream of consciousness will flow in my direction all the time. When it is going somewhere, I took the quality out. So the derogation is stemming from anger. They both have the permanency associated with it. You need to remember that one for the meditation. And then the next one is the disparaging. So the disparaging is marked over here. Palaso is the Pali word. So disparaging, you are always separating. Let us take 2 examples to understand this one. Let us say I have a friend. And my friend got another friend. I don't like him. Maybe his mouth is this way. Maybe he's limping. Bullying and harassment they do have in the school, what would they pick up? They pick up some sort of a fault in that the other child. You know, they you are limping or something, and then use those words to disparage him. Bullying and harassment is due to this disparage. So I could have given up both friends, but I don't want to do that one. Maybe the first friend is a minister of a government or head of a department. I want to keep him because I will get something out of it. And the second friend I don't like, so I want to separate it. So that is disparaging external. Disparaging internal is more harm in there than that one. I can tell you that when I was in Sri Lanka, I went to a hospital to see a sick person. And then next room, there was someone yelling, "No, please cut my leg and put it out." That person's leg has got a wound that he can't sort of tolerate the pain. So he wants doctors to cut it and put it out. But the doctors are not doing it. So what he's actually thinking, it came to my mind as a first instance that the part with the wound is the unskilled state of the mind. And the leg part without the wound is the skilled state of the mind. So I thought that he's trying to separate the unskilled state of the mind from the skilled state of the mind. And it was Sahampati Mahabrahma who corrected me. He said he's not trying to separate the unskilled state of the mind from the skilled state of the mind. He's trying to separate the more unskilled state of the mind from the less unskilled state of the mind. You see, if you are skilled, you are not going to be born. We were born because we are unskilled. So the part with the wound is the more unskilled state of the mind, and part without the wound is the less unskilled state of the mind. So they are trying to separate less unskilled state from the more unskilled state of the mind. So now the disparaging also has got the differences in volitional formations. You see, if my first friend is a head of a department and the second one is also head of a department, the nose of the second friend is the same as the nose of the first friend. I don't want to separate them. I have to keep both of them. So there is this differences in volitional formations in this one. So in other words, you can see disparaging is stemming from the hostility. So let us say, yeah, if I'm not drinking alcohol and another person drinking alcohol, I would label him as a drunken fellow. That drunken fellow is going and joining with my friend's friend. When he's trying to become my friend's friend, I want to separate them. So you can see, hostility we label, this is a drunken fellow, and then when you come to disparaging, then I'm separating him. So remember, disparaging is stemming from hostility. They both inherit the differences in volitional formations. And then the next one is the envy. That is, this envy is marked over here. That office example is a good one for that, isn't it? They gave the job to my friend, my colleague, not to me. So I am envy. So why are we actually envy? You see, there are jobs, promotions in Afghanistan. But if you are in USA, do you care? You say, let them have it. And there are jobs in UK, Australia, you don't care about that one. If you are in California and there are these jobs in, you know, let us say, Houston or somewhere, you don't care. So what is the problem here? Even in California, you may be working in a building, next building, there are promotions. And they are getting it, you don't care. What is the problem here? As soon as you are applying to that job, you took that on as mine. They have given my job to the others. That's why you have the envy. So you can see, in other words, envy is stemming from the derogation. So whatever the permanency associated with the derogation is in the envy part. So how do we, so in envy, you are not tolerating others' gains. You are saying this particular person is having a good time and I am sort of separated from that happiness. So you are sort of thinking that person is having a good time permanently. See how the permanency part is become apparent. So let us say after the interview, one person in the interview board sort of telling you that, you know, they gave the job to the other person, it's not to you they gave. But a funny thing happened. That person was actually going to his office desk. Then he collapsed and died. Maybe because of the happiness, he collapsed and died. Then you don't have any envy nature for that person because he's no longer there. So the permanency is there. On the other hand, they must have separated you from that sort of a game. Let us say in the interview, departmental head is saying, okay, I will give that person that job, but I will give a similar job in a different section, same salary, no difference. Would you care? He got that one, I got this one. So you can see now envy is stemming from derogation. And the derogation is stemming from anger. Those three terms has got the permanency associated with it. And the next one is the stinginess. So the stinginess has been marked over here. And a machariya is Pali word. So sometimes it's translated as meanness or the avarice. So stinginess, there are, it is five types. First one is there is the stinginess concerning the dwelling. And then stinginess regarding this family. And stinginess regarding gain. And stinginess regarding the reputation. And the stinginess regarding doctrine. So you are also here because of the stinginess regarding the doctrine. So you might sort of think that it may be, you know, it's not harmful. But it is also not so. You know, some people in one religion, they are killing the other persons in the other religion because they are not in the same faith or same religion. To understand this stinginess further and the connection to this disparage, let us say a vendor is selling two types of cans. When he sells one type of can, he is getting a $2 profit. When the people are eating that one, it is good because it's less poison. And there is another type of can, and it is when he is selling that one, he gets $4 profit. But it is not good for people because poison is there. So what would this vendor prefer selling? The $4 profit one, isn't it? So then he would actually hide the $2 profit one and then sell the $4 profit one. So in other words, you can see that is a there's a gain. So stinginess is now actually coming from disparaging. So start with the hostility, you can see you label $2, $4. Come to the disparaging, you separate. No, not the $2 one. I'm selling $4 one. So then you get the gain, stinginess regarding the gain. So you can see stinginess is stemming from disparaging. Disparaging is stemming from this hostility. So these three things are linked to each other and they all inherit the differences in volitional formations. So you need to remember that part as well. And then next one is the hypocrisy. That one is not marked over here. Sometimes deceit is another word. That is that someone has done some bad thing and then this person does not want the others to know about it. you want to cover it up. Let us say there are two singers in a village, and one person's songs are being played on radio. The other person's songs are not being played. So the singer whose songs are not being played, then that person has got this envy nature for that person, and then what she is doing, she is going to the and meet those people who are broadcasting those songs and offer them a whiskey bottle or have a lunch with them or maybe have a sexual misconduct with them. And then they are now playing this person's songs. And then the villagers in the village now say, your songs are being played and they are really nice, we are listening to it. So this person shaking the head and taking this compliment. But she knows how she achieved that one by giving a, you know, alcohol bottle or having a sexual misconduct. She does not want to, others to know about it. So that is the deceit or the hypocrisy. And the next one is the fraud. The fraud has not been marked over here either. And you can see the fraud is sort of related to stinginess in a way. And one good example is that there are some vendors in Sri Lanka. They sell 900 grams instead of 1,000 grams. They alter the scale and they cheat that way. So you can see it is related to the stinginess regarding the gain. But this one has a higher term as well. If you get rid of the fraud, then you can go to the seventh jhana, concentration. And then the next one is the obstinacy. Obstinacy is marked over here. Tamba is the Pali word. So this one is the mental rigidity or the inflexibility of the consciousness. So this, because of this, you have fights at your home and the office and so on. You are holding to some sort of a volitional formation as mind. We will give you an example later on. And then the number 12 is the presumption. Presumption is marked just underneath the obstinacy. Another good word is a competition. You know, if one vendor does not like another vendor putting up a shop, selling the same thing next to him. So there is this competition. Someone asked Buddha why he became a monk. And Buddha said something that go in the line of this presumption. He said that people take a rod and then kill each other. You know, the Bodhisattva got the kingship. And because he got, he was a king, then there was some sort of a problem with the water, and then they have to have a war to resolve this one. So Bodhisattva does not like killing people, so he thought, I will leave this one, kingship. And then he saw that dead body, monk and so on, then that was the second thing, so he left. So competition or presumption is there. And then next one is the conceit. The conceit we have not marked, but we can actually mark in this diagram. You can see there is this line one. If you take this line one strongly, that means you have the conceit that you are inferior. One good example is, let us say, the pig is eating excrement, and pig doesn't mind eating excrement, but as a human being, you don't approve it. So you have given a pig a lower value because of it. And I have seen someone, you know, step on these grasses and come into the house, and then look back, and then a cow is coming and eating these grasses, and he was pointing out, look at this cow, you know, poor cow. I step on these grasses and now it is eating them. So since cow is eating grasses, you have given cow a lower value as well. And you are eating broccoli. Broccoli is like a tree, isn't it? So the Brahmas in the Brahma world, then they look at how these people are eating broccoli. So they have given you a lower value as well, because you are eating trees. So you don't mind eating trees. In the same way, a pig does not mind eating a stream. So you can see it's a relative thing. So you can write down in this particular line, if you are taking this line strongly, then you have the conceit you are inferior. And then you can see there is this line too. If you are taking this line too strongly, then you get the idea that you are equal. See, it is coming from this virtue and duty clinging. So remember that the little boy who wants to become an engineer, maybe he is in the first year. He thinks in the first year that I am an engineer. That is how engineering students are thinking. Fourth year comes, this person might die. Didn't pass the exam. Sit for the exam. Medical students are thinking always I'm a doctor. Similarly, the person who is practicing virtue for the sake of being born in the divine world, that person is thinking I'm equivalent to divine being. So the line two, if you are taking this one strongly, then you get the idea that you are equal. And if you take this line three strongly, then you get the idea you are superior. I am fat, I am tall, I have money, and so on. So this superior. So you can see the conceit that you are inferior, conceit that you are equal, conceit that you are superior. And then there is this 14th term is the arrogance. So the arrogance has been marked over here. So one example is that a 16-year-old girl, if she is beautiful, she is arrogant, isn't it? So the condition for this arrogance, general condition, is lack of virtue, which we are going to discuss tomorrow. Now, from the arrogance, we get the obstinacy. From the arrogance, you get the presumption. So I said that I will give you an example for obstinacy, why you fight at home. Here you are holding a volitional formation as mine. Let us say to our house that tomorrow that some people are coming for dinner. So morning comes, my wife is telling, please go and buy an ice cream that some people are coming to the house. So we need to give her, for the dessert, we need to give her ice cream. So as a person who has studied this Buddha's teaching, I was thinking, what's the point of giving an ice cream? You know, Buddha is saying that we eat just to maintain the body. So what is the ice cream going to do? It's okay to give them rice and curry and so on, but no point giving an ice cream. So that is my view, isn't it? So I come in through this mental volition path, then I have the view there's no need to give an ice cream. And again, I am coming through another path. So that path is the second path, and I go to anger. Why? Because, you know, if I am going to buy an ice cream, then I have to devote the time that I have allocated for my meditation. So I'm saying my wife is harming me. So I go to the anger state. You know, sometimes people are in the office troubling you. Are they actually troubling you? Or are they actually troubling the work you do? They trouble the work you do. So then you consider it as, you know, harming yourself. So what I'm actually holding is meditation. So I'm thinking that my wife is harming me, so I go into the anger state. So going to the second path and the third path, I go to the obstinacy state that I am saying I'm not going to buy an ice cream. So my wife certainly went to this third path. She got a view, if someone is coming to the house, we should be giving them an ice cream for the dessert. And she also going through another path. Which one is it? Is it the first one? The second one? Or the fourth one? It is the first one, isn't it? Because ice cream is the physical neutron. So she is spinning with Bob of lust. She is not asking you to buy something that she is not eating. So she can give to the other person and then she can eat as well. So spinning with the Bob of lust. So going through the first path and the third path, and she is going to the obstinacy. She is insisting that you should buy an ice cream. So I am saying, I am not going to buy an ice cream. So what happened now? It's like two bulls putting their horns together, isn't it? How long you stay in that particular state without uttering a speech to each other? One day, 2 days, maybe a week. So the sooner you let go of this one, the happiness you have at your home. So how do I let go? I am thinking in my side, if she is needed this ice cream that bad, then let me give up the meditation for today. I can do it tomorrow. So let me go and buy an ice cream. So this my side is blossom. Or else my wife is thinking, if this is, this buying ice cream business is harming his meditation that much, then let me not have the ice cream. So her side is frozen, and then so we have the happiness. When the father is fighting with the son, the mother is fighting with the daughter, it's all something to do with this views over here. Father is thinking he is right, and the son is thinking he is right. So the views are creating the problem over here. So the next one to learn, the number 15, is the vanity. The vanity is pride, which we have not marked over here. So there is this vanity because of the clan. I am an American, I am Australian, and so on. And it is there. And then there is a vanity due to health. You know, if someone has got cancer, and if you don't have it, if the other person is saying, I have cancer, so at once, what is the thought that is coming to your mind? Oh, it's really good, I don't have it. You know, after that one, you might be saying something with a compassion mind to the other person. So in other words, that person is dying and I am living. So that is vanity due to health. And then next one is the negligence. It's a defilement of the mind. The negligence has not been marked over here. Here we get the negligence because of this wrong bodily, wrong verbal, or wrong mental actions, or the succumbing, or the repeated succumbing of consciousness to the five strands of sensual pleasures, or not working carefully. In other words, let us say, sometimes parents are saying this child is neglectful. That person is not studying, you know, watching TV, playing games and so on. And what happened to that person? He was subject to sensual pleasures. So therefore, that person become neglectful. So we have learned 16 terms. Now, Buddha is saying, knowing monks' covetousness and unrighteous greed to be a defilement of the mind, the monk abandons them. Knowing ill will to be a defilement of the mind, he abandons it. Knowing anger to be a defilement of the mind, he abandons it. So similarly, up to the term, knowing negligence to be a defilement of the mind, he abandons it. 16 terms. When in the monk who thus knows that covetousness and unrighteous greed are a defilement of the mind, this covetousness and unrighteous greed have been abandoned. When in him who knows thus ill will is a defilement of the mind, this ill will has been abandoned. And similarly, when in him who thus knows that negligence is a defilement of the mind, this negligence has been abandoned. He thereupon gains unwavering confidence in the Buddha thus. Thus indeed is the blessed one. He is accomplished, fully enlightened, endowed with clear vision and good conduct, sublime knower of the world, the incomparable guide of men who are tractable, the teacher of gods and men, enlightened and blessed. So this is the meaning of this Ithibhiso Gatha. So the Buddha has got 72 knowledges. Out of that one, in many discourses, Buddha sort of elaborate three such knowledges. First, Buddha has got this ability to recall fast words. It is called Puppe Vana Sutinyan. So Buddha can recall that he was in such and such a birth. Now, after passing away, he was born here and so on. And he can recall your ones as well. And then Buddha has the ability to look at the future as well. This person having done these killings daily and so on, this person will be born in bad world, nether world, in the future. And this person not having done those things will be born in these good places. So that is this what is called Chutupapata Jnana. And then Buddha got the third knowledge that is called Asravakya Jnana. Buddha destroy canker, stains. And Buddha can teach you how to destroy your ones as well. Those are the three knowledges. And then there are this 15 kind of conduct, which is sort of explained in this Seka Patipada Sutta, the 53rd discourse in the middle and saying, if you want to read that, you can sort of read later on. So Buddha can train people as well, guide men, teacher of gods and men, enlightened and blessed. And then he's talking about the Dhamma. He gains unwavering confidence in Dhamma, thus well proclaimed by the Blessed One, is this Dhamma, realizable here and now, possessed of immediate result, bidding you come and see, accessible and knowable individually by the wise. And this Dhamma is for the wise persons. And he gains unwavering confidence in the Sangha. The Sangha of the Blessed One's disciple has entered on the good way, has entered on the straight way, has entered on the true way, has entered on the proper way. That is to say, the four pairs of men, the eight type of persons, this Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples, is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offering, worthy of reverential salutation, the incomparable field of merits for the world. So here we are talking about eight, four pairs of men, the eight types of persons. That is the stream entry path and the fruit. The once written path and the fruit. The never written path and the fruit. And then the Arahant path and the fruit. So there are eight persons. Only the noble ones are counted in the Sangha. When he has thus given up, renounced, let go, abandoned, relinquished, defilement in parts, he knows I am endowed with unwavering confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. And he gains enthusiasm for the goal, gains enthusiasm for the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When he is glad, joy is born in him. We enjoy his mind, his body become tranquil. His body being tranquil, he feels happiness. And the mind of him who is happy become concentrated. So there are five words over here: gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness and concentration. So, you know, the day that you do charity work, you are happy. You know, you offer Buddhist monks food or do some other charity, then you get the gladness. So the gladness has the ability to produce higher gladness. So the higher gladness is called joy or priti in Pali, priti. And then let us say you are sitting down on that chair and it is not comfortable, then you feel sort of feeling like going, you know, out of this one and looking for a good chair. So, but if you have a rapture in your head, you don't have attention to where your body is touching and the pain. So you get the physical tranquility, bodily tranquility. And again, why are you thinking that I should be going out of this chair? Is that you are thinking that in this temple there must be sort of a comfortable chair. So, in other words, your mind is going outward. But if you have the happiness, mind will remain inside. So inwardly composed. So then there you have the mental tranquility as well. So when the mind is become inwardly composed, then you are happy. If you are still looking for chairs outside, then you are not happy. So the happiness leads to concentration. So there are five things. From the gladness, you get the joy. From the joy, you get the tranquility. Tranquility to happiness. Happiness to the concentration. So it says, if a monk of such virtue, such concentration, such wisdom eats alms food, consisting of choice hill rice together with various sauces and curries, even that will be no obstacle for him. Just as cloth that is stained and dirty become clean and bright with the help of pure water, or just as gold become clean and bright with the help of a furnace, so too if a monk of such virtue, such concentration, such wisdom eats alms food consisting of choice hill rice together with various sauces and curries, even that will be no obstacle for him. He abides, having suffused with the mind of loving kindness, one direction of the world, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, and so above and below, around and everywhere and to all. He abides suffusing the entire universe with loving kindness, with a mind grown great, lofty, boundless, and free from enmity and ill will. So you are spreading loving kindness. You know, in the north side, there are human beings and also animals. So you are spreading loving kindness to them. If you go through that axis a little bit further, then, you know, there are these hells. So you are spreading loving kindness to them as well. 136 hells are there. And then you go further. And then the divine worlds are there. And then the Brahma worlds and so on. Wow, the population wise, is the population over here in the human world bigger or the divine world? It is the divine world that population is very high. Over here is only 7 billion. The first divine realm, they got 72 billion. And the next one, 700 billion. And go on like that one. If you go to the first jhana realm, there are about trillion Brahmas over there. So you are spreading loving kindness to so many. And to the east, south, west, and the above and below. So spreading the loving kindness. So over here, is there any place that it says, let I be well? There isn't. If it is not there, why do you say that? Then we should not be spreading loving kindness to oneself. We should be spreading to all the other living beings. Tomorrow you will be learning why it is bad. You see, there is a door bar over here in the mental volition path, which you would be destroying when you become a noble person. So when you are saying, let I be well, then you are looking at a family, me, myself, and the, you know, other people. So the stinginess, so you are holding to a sort of family, therefore you are nailing your own coffin. You can't get out of this one. That is the handcuffed associated with the families. Tomorrow we'll discuss this one further. So don't spread the loving kindness to yourself, spread to all the others. I can assure you, Buddha has never said that one, let I be well. Nowhere in the Buddha's discourses. But this is spreading like a virus. People without knowing Buddhism, they are actually thinking, let I be well. And so on. That is wrong. Your mind won't become great by doing that one. And then similarly, he abides having suffused with the mind of compassion, karuna. And the sympathetic joy, you appreciate your joy, is called mudita in Pali. And then the equanimity, that is upekkha in Pali. To the, all the directions, living beings. So he understands what exists, what is low, what is excellent, and what escape there is from this whole field of perception. You see this loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and the equanimity, they are doors to the Nibbana. They are not the Nibbana itself. So having understood they are the doors, then but he understands, so there is this escape from this field of perception, so there is Nibbana. When he knows and sees in this way, his mind becomes liberated from the canker of sensual desire, liberated from the canker of becoming, liberated from the canker of ignorance. When liberated, there is knowledge, it is liberated, and he knows his birth is exhausted. The life of purity has been lived. The task is done. There is no more of this to come. Such a monk is called one bathed with inner bathing. So, you see, although we have a bath, then it won't purify us. Because inside us, we have this envy, stinginess, derogation, disparaging, all those, you know, 16 defilements. But Buddha is saying, if we actually get rid of these 16 defilements, then you have had an inner bath. You cleanse your, the whole thing internally. So, when this was said, then this there was a Brahmin, Sundarika Bharadwaja, seated near, not far from the Buddha. He was asking that the Buddha is going to have a bath in the Bahuka River. And Buddha was asking what that river can do. Then the Brahmin said that people get an understanding that when you have a bath, then you get the purification. And Buddha said that, you know, bloody-handed person, he won't get purified by having a bath in the river. And says that it is here, O Brahmin, that you should have the bath to make yourself a safe refuge for all beings. In other words, Buddha is asking him to cleanse his mind from these 16 defilements. And if you speak no untruth, no work any harm or treat in things, no take what is not offered with the faith and with no avarice, to Gayagom, what would it do for you? Let any well your Gaya be. When this was said, the Brahmin Sundarika Bharadwaja said that magnificent Master Gautama, Dhamma has been made clear in many ways. It's like that lighting a lamp for someone to see. And then he was asking for to become a monk, and then Buddha ordained him, and then he later on he became an arahant. So that is the discourse. So how we going to meditate this one? Sampati Mahabrahma says that you take four terms over here for the meditation out of 16. That is the envy, stinginess, derogation and disparage. Those are the four terms. Envy, stinginess, derogation and disparage. Do we have them? We have them, isn't it? So you need to shake your sack a little bit so that it, this one will come out. Don't take anybody else's anything. You take your one. You know, that day my mom gave the pencil to that boy, not to me. So then you become envy. You know, moms are giving pencils to children anyway. Why you are becoming envy? Because that it is my mom. You know, my mom should be given to me. So, and again the office example, then as soon as you are applying, you took that particular job as mine. So in other words, you understand from your example, you are sort of uncovering, you know, you are going to take this Tathagata Dhamma, envy stemming from derogation. Remember, derogation is the post-perception of you taking something as mine. My mom should be given it to me. So, envy is stemming from derogation. These are not little terms. You see, if someone understands envy, and if you understand the envy stemming from derogation, and then you give up envy, then you get the, you are going into the fifth jhana. You see a sort of a black space. You know, when the moon is not there and clouds are not there, you can see far away, stars are there. So that is the space is infinite. That is the fifth jhana. You enter there by understanding of this dependent origination over here. Envy is stemming from derogation. Maybe I gave examples. So again, if someone understands the derogation and you understand how the derogation is stemming from, and then you give up derogation, then you can go into the sixth jhana. You see the light. You see your forehead, right side, is the faculty of wisdom. And the left side, you get the faculty of mindfulness. And they eliminate it, and then you see a light. So that is your light. So that is the sixth jhana. So remember, what is the derogation is stemming from? It's from the anger, isn't it? Remember, we said that these three terms are linked to each other. Envy is stemming from derogation. Derogation is from anger. You know, that stream of consciousness, my boss was promoting me. Yeah. He was giving me the job. I had the faith about him. I was thinking that he should be looking. He should be promoting me, not my colleague. So I was thinking it is sort of stemming. It will come to my direction. So I take the quality out. So, and again, disparaging. Are we doing disparaging? All the time we do that one. Are you happy with the meal that you are getting? You normally think, oh, if I buy this lunch packet from that shop, that, you know, food stall, they will give me a papadam or something, you know. Something like that. And the curry, you have this disparaging curry wise, you know, this particular curry, this is not the way to make it. My mom was making in a better way. So whatever thing you got, the job that you got, are you happy with your job? Then you are not going to apply for the promotion, isn't it? Because you are not happy with your job. You are thinking my boss's job is the best one. You know, he is actually drinking a cup of tea, having his leg on the table, and he's asking me to do this one, that one. It is good that if I get that one. If you get that one, then you think boss's job is the best one. So this is never ending over here. Always we separate. So if someone understands disparaging and what is it stemming from, then you give up disparaging, you go to the eighth jhana. Neither perception, nor non-perception. Remember, disparaging is stemming from hostility. We label and then disparage. So stinginess. So what is actually stopping you when you are spreading the loving kindness for you to go to the immeasurable state of loving kindness? It is this stinginess. You see, let us say there is an ant and then there is an elephant. Which one you are actually giving a value? To the elephant, isn't it? You are looking like the ant, and so let us say you are spreading loving kindness, let the ant be well, and then you go to the elephant. Now you are actually stuck over there. You are thinking, if I have an elephant, then people sort of respect me. I can use that one to, you know, drag logs or something. And rich people got elephants. So now you are thinking about the value you are going to get from the elephant. Now let us say elephant is now having a tummy pain and it is crying. Then you look at the ant. You know, I have seen, some people are saying, look at this ant is going here and there doing the job. The other elephant is not doing the job. And so that's, we are thinking about the gain because of the elephant. So if you get rid of the stinginess, then you can go into the immeasurable state of loving kindness. So you need to understand the stinginess, and it is stemming from this disparaging. And so you give up that one, then you can go to the immeasurable state. So these are not simple terms. So getting rid of the stinginess, you can go to the immeasurable state of loving kindness. And over here, the envy, if you understand envy and it is stemming, what is it stemming? Stemming from derogation. And you give up the envy, then you can go to the immeasurable state of compassion. The end point will be the space is infinite. And if someone understands the derogation and what is it stemming from, and you give up derogation, then you get the immeasurable state of appreciative joy. That is this Oh, the end point of that one will be that light, that is the consciousness is infinite. And if someone understands disparaging and what is it stemming from, and give up the disparaging, then you can go into the immeasurable state of equanimity, upekkha. And the end point would be the eight jhana. So here, metta, loving kindness, the envy, compassion, and then derogation, this mudita, the appreciative joy, and the upekkha, equanimity. Metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha in Pali. So you need to use your own example. So if you have done envy for someone, then you know, from your childhood or whatever, in the office, then this person was got affected, isn't it? So how to fix that? That was your former karma. So what Buddha is saying, to fix this former karma, then you need to spread the loving kindness. So that's the way to get rid of that. So you spread the loving kindness at that time. Let this be, these people be well, free from suffering and enmity. So I will tell how Sampati Mahabrahma trained me. You know, in Sri Lanka, there is this particular saying called Paraballa. Para means not mine, not mine. And the balla means dog. So it doesn't translate very well, you know, not my dog. But I haven't got any term, you know, comparable term in English language. So I will use that example. So then he was asking me, Sampati Mahabrahma was telling me, show me how that, you know, paraballa or not my dog is constructing from this diagram. It is also constructed from this diagram. So I took an example, you know, those days in early days in Sri Lanka. There were these poor people who are coming to your house 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, they are hungry. So then you have food and you give it to them. They eat it. And then they, those days, they have some gratitude. And then they take this weed out of your garden and then go. Next day also is coming around 3 o'clock. So you have some food, you give it to them. Then they, having eaten, maybe take out the weed and then go. So 2 or 3 weeks later, then you understand this person is not stealing from you. So then you ask, where are you sleeping? So this person is saying, I don't have any place to stay there. I am sleeping underneath a tree. So then those days people have got big land. So in a corner of your land, you construct some sort of hut and let this person stay there. And then he's staying and then taking food out of your house and sort of living a life. And then one day, let us say, when I go to work and coming back from the office, then I see this person is in my enemy's house. And what do you say? Paraballa, not my dog. So when I say dog, then you take the human quality away. The derogation is there. So that is coming through this third path. And para means not mine. But this person was never mine, isn't it? He was an outside. But I have made part of me. That is something with this virtue and duty clinging. You see, when Buddha is preaching Dhamma, Buddha is saying that in one discourse, if you give something to an animal, you can expect 100 in return. If you give to a human being, you can expect 1,000 in return. If you give to a virtuous person, then you can expect 100,000. If you give to a stream enterer, a noble person, then you know, it is countless. You can't count how much. And not speak about the once returners, never returners, and arahants, and the Buddha. So in that case, I have given this person food just because, not because my body is itching or something. I am going to get some sort of a gain because I will be born rich next birth. Or I will be going to a divine world also. So that virtue and duty clinging hold in the future. So coming through the second part and the third part, then we construct this not my dog. The dog part is from the third one. Para, not mine, is from the virtue and deity clinging. So this diagram is for you to use. Now, if you are angry, for example, which path you have come through is the first, second, third or fourth. You can see anger is in the second path. Now you look at why am I angry? Oh, I have come through the second path. So now you go to the top. And the top, what is there is the contact. It is nothing, isn't it? This is I and the form, ear and the sound. So then you come down over here. That's the problem, virtue and duty clinging. When you are getting married to your husband, you might have thought my husband is going to be a very good one. When you are getting married to a wife, might have thought that your wife is going to be a good one. When you got a baby, you might have thought that my son or daughter is going to be a very good one. But it is not so, isn't it? The mother is always thinking, you know, my son or daughter will not utter never utter bad speech towards me. You know, like the baby, they will utter a good speech. But when they grow up, are they like that one? No, they have this harsh speech and things like that one, isn't it? So, when the baby was born, when whatever thing you are holding, you know, my baby is going to be like this cuddly nature sort of thing. You give up that one and then your anger is gone with it. This is the beauty of understanding Dhamma. When you understand it, the cause of this happening, then, you know, all the things are gone with it and then you get the concentration. So, those are the four terms, envy, stinginess, derogation and disparaging. Take your own example and then look at the link. Why did I become angry? You know, that one day I become envy. That day my mother gave pencil to the other person. So I was envy. Not to me, because it's my mother. So in other words, envy is stemming from derogation. So use the examples, or your own examples, and then you spread the loving kindness. So let us take sort of 20 minutes or so for you to have a discussion, and then we will do the meditation after that.